Well, the time now, 25 minutes to one, and I welcome into the studio my guest in this hour of the show. It's Rob Goddard. Rob, thank you for coming in.
Steve, my pleasure. Thank you for the invite onto your show.
Not at all. Robert has produced a book called Suicide to Success, How a Locked Exit Gave Him a Way Out. Is that in a brand new edition, actually, with a lovely new cover. And we'll talk about that in detail and your own remarkable story. But let's go way back, first of all, Rob, to the start. Where were you born? Where are you from originally?
I'm a Hackney boy, so I'm a Cockney-ish.
Yeah, now I see you support Arsenal as well.
Long-suffering Arsenal supporter,
yes. Ups and downs. In fact, we've got friends in the newsroom who support Arsenal. And, of course, you seem to be, at least, I think there's a crack of light now, isn't there, with the new manager, don't you think?
Fingers crossed, but I've been around a long time.
Well, you say that. I mean, under Arsene Wenger, what a remarkable squad they were. So it wasn't as if you haven't enjoyed great success.
I know, but you've got to keep repeating it like a good salesman.
Yeah, but that's not possible. It's bound to go up and down. Look at Man United. They were in the ascendance for many years, weren't they?
True.
Man City have had their day. Liverpool have now come to the fore. When will the local Bristol City and Bristol Rovers have their turn, I wonder?
Fingers crossed. Again.
Have you been to the Arsenal ground then in recent years?
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, it's a fabulous stadium, isn't it?
Yeah, I've had a box there.
So. Oh, have you?
Yeah.
You lucky devil. Well, you must invite your friends in local radio sometime. I've only ever been in a box at the Bristol Rovers once years ago, and that was an amazing experience because you get a different view of the game, don't you?
You do, absolutely.
Yeah, it's much more relaxed. You don't get quite as much swearing. Where did you go to school then? Was that in the Hackney area?
I started off in Upminster because we moved out to Essex, and then we in 69 we moved to Basingstoke, part of the London overspill at that
time. And you're in Basingstoke these days. I'm sure many people don't know anything about it other than hearing the name on traffic reports. What's it got to offer the visitor? Is there anything to go there for?
It's got a wonderful theatre. It's got 52 roundabouts, one for every week of the year.
Oh, that's something, isn't it? Now, you studied as a young man business and banking, and initially you worked with NatWest for around about 15 years, so you embedded in quite a bit there, weren't you?
I was.
But you decided it wasn't for you, really, didn't you?
No, I'd realised as I went up the tree, corporate tree, that I wanted something else in life, so I gave it all up, sold up.
You went to America, didn't
you? Yeah, I went to California.
Tell me about that. It's been an interesting experience.
I lived in a commune with 90 other Christians at the time.
Oh, right.
And we fed the poor, 700-800 Hispanics a week.
Gosh.
Low income, and not just the food, but giving them company and companionship.
What a contrast to your work in this country, then.
I know.
Extraordinary. You had to come back, though, and you ended up getting other jobs, and you've had various jobs over the years. What was your first job when you came back after being in the States?
I spent 4 years doing telesales for a marketing company. Hated it.
I bet you did.
But they promoted me and I became head of operations. It took me 4 years and then I moved across into mergers and acquisitions, buying and selling of companies.
And you've worked in finance, in headhunting, in executive coaching. You've done a bit of lecturing as well at Portsmouth University. Do you enjoy that?
I love it. Yeah. I love actually sharing gems with other people.
Uh-huh. Well, you own 4 businesses these days and you're pretty much hands off from what I understand. They are autonomous, are they, pretty much?
Yeah, I've got 4 businesses, 2 in the UK, 1 in Dubai. And then I'm just launching a travel business in Albania, because my other half is Albanian.
Do you find that when you walk into one of the offices of the businesses, everyone gets a bit tense?
It depends. They may not know why I'm there.
Yeah. Now, you wrote a previous book, we should mention, which is available online if you search for it, called The 10 Commandments and the 11 Cardinal Sins of Selling a Business. And I have to say, looking at it, the response from readers is really positive. It's a short book, but it's full of, you know, your knowledge, isn't it?
It is. It's actually the 11 commandments and the 7 cardinal sins.
I beg your pardon.
I don't want people searching.
11 commandments, 7 cardinal sins. But you've distilled your knowledge there, haven't you?
Yeah, it's 350-odd transactions that I've been responsible for over the years, distilled into a nice, handy book that business owners can use to help them prepare and grow their business for an exit one day.
Yeah, the problem is there's a lot of sentiment when people look, particularly if it's a family business, they almost don't want to sell it. Is that true?
The biggest reason people don't sell their business once they've built it over 20, 30 years is letting go. Mm. There's something in the psyche.
Yeah, there's a response from somebody under one of the sales saying, thank God we bought this book, it stopped us making loads of mistakes, which is what you want, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm a great believer in giving first.
Yeah. Now, you're known these days not only as for your businesses, but you're an internationally known business advisor, a mentor, author, a speaker. You do one-to-ones with professionals. You run workshops. You're a busy man. You give people advice on how to avoid burnout.
Yes.
In a nutshell, how do you avoid burnout?
Well, I went through it myself, personally. So I've been there, worn the T-shirt, and come out the other side. Have a balance. Don't get too obsessed that everything else in life disappears. Make sure you have time for people closest to you, your family, your closest friends, and actually relax. Don't work 24/7.
Yeah, well, you've achieved that. You've got a lovely balance. Also, you tell people about achieving their magic number. What do you mean when you refer to the magic number?
So what I mean by that is, what is the capital sum that you need in life in order to finish that chapter in your life and start a new one?
Mm-hmm.
Not the value of their business, but what is it with all your assets? What is that number? And there's usually only one of four answers. I mean, given that there's an infinite number of numbers, there's only
what
one of four
answers.
What are those
four answers?
1 million, 3 million, 5 million or 10 million, depending on the size of the business.
Yeah. See, to me, I've said this many times on air, I don't believe that money is that big a factor in happiness. And there are plenty of miserable millionaires and billionaires out there who are screwed up, unhappy, have had rubbish lives, terrible relationships. You can be perfectly happy on a relatively modest amount of money, can you?
You can, and I had it wrong. My relationship with money previously was wrong. I was more interested in career, striving, money and materialism.
Well, that brings us to your book and your own story. 2012, you were not in a good way. Just tell us, what was the position in your life, both personally and career-wise at that time?
Well, it stemmed in 2008. I lost my £300,000-a-year job, lost my marriage.
Let's just rein you in there. How did you lose a job? Wham!
My fault entirely.
Yeah.
I got my priorities wrong. And so, parted company, I'd always been in paid employment. I'd always had a salary. And parted company, so I had no job. My marriage was on the rocks, yeah. And I lost regular contact with my kids.
Gosh, how many children did you have?
At the time, three. I've got six now.
So you went from a fat salary to very little in a short space of time.
And that fat salary was paid the same day every month.
Gosh.
When you're self-employed,
yeah,
you don't know when you're going to get paid.
Blimey. So
that all happened within 4 months.
And then a little while after, you visited Dubai. You went to the Burj Khalifa, which is the world-famous tallest building in the world. Why were you actually there?
I spent 2 years battling with depression. As soon as I lost all the things in my life that created security, I went into a depression cycle for 2 years. I did have antidepressants. I became a functioning alcoholic for those 2 years. And I wasn't bouncing back. So I decided to run away. I've been told subsequently it's doing a geographic. So I ran away to Dubai. Nothing wrong with Dubai. It's a wonderful part of the world. The problem was with me, but my problems came with me on the plane.
When you went to Dubai, what were your aspirations? You wanted to set up a business there, did you? Or get work of some kind?
No, I took a job offer on commission only. So I wanted to start with a blank canvas that no one knew me. But all I did was went from the frying pan into the fire, because now I didn't. I had no certainty about income. I took myself away from my family and friends. I was on my own.
Yeah, you were isolated.
In the desert.
You couldn't pick a worse place in some respects. Because although Dubai itself is a city that is, you know, marvellous in lots of ways, it's an artificial creation. It shouldn't really be there. It's a flipping desert, isn't it?
It is spectacular. But you're right. It can be a harsh environment.
Yeah.
If you haven't got it together. Yeah. So I spent several months trying to bounce myself back up in Dubai. Didn't work, and I woke up one morning and decided I've had enough of the torment mentally and emotionally, and I wanted to finish it.
Okay, well, we're going to continue the story after this.